they may be at another Monday if they kept that minute with them. So then they can start the meeting. So you gotta just keep when you want that. So just give 5 to 7 minutes time to get ready. Now technology is agreeing that we may start. I declare this meeting officially open and I welcome everybody present here. I want to state that we are meeting here today as invited by the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration, so that we consider the Public Service Amendment Bill that has been introduced to Parliament, and we are looking forward to finalizing the bill and the debate, adopt or not adopt the bill in no time. The business of the day today, as most of you will remember, is that we are conducting what is traditionally called a public hearing. We have given an opportunity, as some of you may remember, that yesterday we were supposed to have had public hearing with COSATU and their affiliates on the bill. And of course, as you remember, that a submission was made to the Portfolio Committee that there has been some discussion with the department, between the department and COSATU, the product of which was said to be shared with us today. So we are continuing. The platform is ready for the department, as we're told that they are going to lead what may be said to be a joint report back. Of course, COSATU is here, the department is here, the Public Service Commission is here as an active observer. The Portfolio Committee is here, well represented, our committee, staff section is here, represented, our Parliament Monitoring Group is here, I believe the media is here, so that they can get it from the horse's mouth. I'm not sure what is that here. but well, we are here and ready for the hearing. But before we do that, I think it will be proper that we just do an introduction of ourselves. I know we know each other very well, but sometimes, you know, you attend so many meetings. Sometimes when you are in this meeting, You think that you are in the meeting that you attended before getting to that. So you may attach a wrong name to wrong figure. My name is Richard Baloyi. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration. I'm acting for the chairperson who may be joining us very soon. We have, I know she will introduce herself when her turn comes, but I think it's proper for me to acknowledge that this committee has received a new member. A new member of the committee. He's not just new, he's actually new from the board. Fresh and new. This is a fresh. He's not just new in the committee, he's a new member of parliament. And this is a fresh committee meeting to attend on a fresh day in parliament. Her name is Pat. She's going to say more about her name and the like when a term comes. He's a member of the IFP. He's not just a member of the IFP. He's an IFP member of parliament deployed to the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. He is the national chairperson, I'm told, of the IFP Youth Brigade. So, welcome, sir. So, it's a maiden attendance, you know. So, she will give a maiden contribution, even as the other person will understand that it comes from here. Can we then move, just introduce yourself, please, to start with point for that.
Nathan Kofokusatu.
Hi, I'm Neil Newman, from the Nihau Parliamentary Office. I'm the President of Kofokusatu.
I'm Usha Rupnarain, a member of this committee. I'm Patsy Libanya.
Hi, Jujuris, member of the committee.
How many members of the committee?
Let's go, brother, from the Office of the Public Service Commission.
Sputzongado, independent newspaper. I'm Sheila Nguyen from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
Lusanda Mjong, Parliamentary Staff.
Nicole Collet from PMG.
Sharon Sasaki from PMG. Norman Mahara, Public Service Commission.
Jane
Masumela,
member of the committee.
Kenneth Kumalo, member of the committee.
Daniel Tim, member of the committee.
Obuelen Tim from Public Service Ministry.
Jim Ziela, Community Research.
My name is Rosie, DPC.
Maybe from Square, DPSA.
Colette Clark, DPSA.
Thank you very much. We now know each other. We now know the people. What more? The department is going to lead us in leading the discussions of today, or making an input that will lead the discussions today. But before I hand over, let me just say there are those who checked with some of us yesterday after the adjournment, because yesterday's meeting was extremely short. The shortest meeting that you might have actually had in your lifetime. And as to then, so what? We are meeting here today, like I've indicated, to continue with the consideration of the bill. What the department is going to do is to lead the process of public hearing today, focusing specifically on development as the department interacted with COSATU, with the FBGS, with the other entities that had interest to even have bilaterals and then be able to come forward and report. From here, the committee is going into formal consideration. We will have had all stakeholders that have interest to input into the process of the bill so that the legislative process, when it is concluded, it is actually as interactive and participative as our democracy dictates. So we are going to then say, having had all who had to say what they had to say on the bill, so as a committee, what is it that we are actually doing? So the engagement on the bill is not actually being concluded today. We are looking forward to conclude if all things go well. You know, there are those people who argue more especially those who understand economics, they will say there is a rule called ceteris paribus. Assuming that all other things remain the same, we would like to see ourselves concluding the consideration of the bill and expressing our views as a portfolio committee on the bill by early June, so that we can have both the two houses of parliament passing the bill by June later. So that is the process that is there for all of us. Department, I'm not sure correct who's leading the presentation.
I just want to give apologies for Professor Levine, who's abroad, and I'll be heading the delegation, but Advocate from Squirt would be doing the presentation on behalf of DPSA. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, your representation on behalf of the joint consulted DPSA technical team and to presenting on what was amendments that were proposed or agreed to that we should propose it to the portfolio committee after final discussions with between the political principals of the two institutions. Now, what I will do during the presentation, I'll just drop off each heading or area that to allow my colleague from COSATU, Neil Newman, to respond or to comment if he so wishes. Now, the first area of concern that COSATU raised pertain to government agencies, and just to highlight some of the concerns they raised. The first area was, I said there was the possibility of fragmentation in the public service, of having too many agencies. Then they also raised concern about whether it would be appropriate for these agencies to provide certain basic services such as health care and education, for instance, a public hospital. And then thirdly, there was clarification requested on the position of employees in respect of bargaining practice in a public service. Now, very shortly, the proposal that was agreed to that we want to present to the portfolio committee is that instead of government agencies, we provide for two new different structures. So the first one we call a specialized service delivery unit, which is something within a department, and the other one is a government component. Now I'll go into detail on some of these on the proposal. Now, the key features of the government component are the following. It's a separate organizational form within a public service, but it's outside the department, so it's not a subcomponent or a unit of the department. It's established by a presidential proclamation, and it's listed in Schedule 3 to the Act, but there will also be a link with the principal department, which was similar to the suggestion in respect of government agencies. But the important new provision that we propose in respect of government components, which we didn't have in respect of government agencies, is that these components may only be created if a feasibility study has been conducted. And the content of the study and how it will be conducted will be prescribed in the regulations. And only if that study concludes or recommends such an establishment, may they proceed with the process. And that is approaching formally the Minister of Public Service and Administration and the Minister of Finance. And then finally, if they advise that they should go ahead with the President's approach for establishment in terms by way of proclamation. Then a further important difference between the government agency and government component is that we explicitly provide in the proposed clause that the government component may not perform functions in respect of housing, health care, food, water, social security, children, and education. Now, these are socioeconomic rights referred to in Section 26 to 29 of the Constitution. So in respect of these functions, it could not be performed by components. And the argument was basically that these are core services and it should, as far as possible, be provided by the department itself as close as possible to the political functionaries. But you would know that some of these are actually currently provided by outside institutions. In the case of Social Security, you have the Social Security Agency, which is a public entity. Then similar to government agency, also provide that these components may have assigned functions, but we once again provide that such assignments will be subject to parliamentary approval. And then lastly, we also similar to government agency, provide that there should be a government notice that will list the functions of these components and also certain operational arrangements. You will find the proposed clause on the other document that was handed out, which actually articulates the actual proposed amendment on pages 2 to 4, and it's the proposed new 67A. Now, to come to the other organizational form that you proposed, that is of a specified service delivery unit. Now, as indicated earlier, this is a unit within the department. It's initiated by an executive authority, a premier, MEC, or a minister. In this instance, we don't provide for listing in by proclamation in a schedule to the Public Service Act, but just in a government notice, because it's actually essentially a subcomponent of the department. So we thought it's not necessary to list it in the Public Service Act. And in this instance, there is no limitation on the kind of functions that this unit could perform. So it could also perform healthcare or education functions if appropriate. That's obviously also always subject to other legislation. Similar to government components, it may also have assigned powers, and once again, with Parliament's approval. And then instead of a government notice, which is published in the case of this unit, we propose there should be a charter that will list the functions of this unit and also the operational arrangements. Now, to come to the key differences between or provisions that you currently can't have in terms of the current legislation, these are the following. The one relates to human resources powers and the other one to financial powers. Now, what we propose is that in respect of such a unit, if the executing authority, executive authority decides to delegate HR powers in terms of the Public Service Act, with respect to that unit, it may only be delegated to the head of that unit and not to the head of the department. So then there will be direct delegations to the head of that unit in order to allow that head to deal with HR-related matters within that component and not to be reliant on the head of the department or the executive authority for these powers. Then the second difference between current departments or what we can provide for currently in the public service is the provision that the accounting officer of the department, now often that's always the DG or the head of the department, but it's not always the case. There's some instances where someone else is appointed as the accounting officer, for instance in the case of the presidency, the chief operating officer is the accounting officer. So we have to say accounting officer. We provide that there's compulsory delegations of all financial functions in terms of the Public Finance Management Act to the head of this unit. So we say compulsory, so to give them, to compel them to delegate these financial functions, and also to empower that head to operate separately to some extent in terms of finances. But then, in this case, we also provide that such delegations are subject to treasury approval. Because these are delegations in terms of Public Finance Management Act that are administered by the Minister of Finance. And when it comes to delegations, the normal rule is that when you delegate a function, that delegation may be withdrawn in any if the delegator so decides.
So what you provide in the Act is that such delegations may only be revoked in special circumstances, and those circumstances will be determined by Treasury in terms of their regulations and instructions. And then secondly, we also thought it's necessary that we provide some kind of special accountability arrangement for the head of this unit, because he will have these compulsory delegated financial functions, and that also be determined by National Treasury. For instance, that person would appear before SCOPA for the financial, the exercise of financial powers. In terms of what you propose here, instead of the accounting officer of the department, that's something that could be provided for if this is adopted. I can just give my colleague from my technical team colleague from Kapal if he wants to add anything or.
For the moment, I think it's fine. Can deal with it just afterwards when there are questions and discussions. But at the moment,
okay. The next area, in respect of which Kosatu raised concerns, was pertains to conditions of service. There was basically two main areas that they raised concern. We find these issues on paragraph 3 of the other document on pages 5 to 6. The first one was that they required clarity on about ministerial determinations on conditions of service. Now, there is a general provision in the current Act and also in the proposed amendment that all actions in terms of the Act are subject to certain collective agreements concluded in the Department of Councils of the Public Service. But instead of the particular power to address this concern, we propose that we include a phrase which says that this clause will be subject to the existing collective agreement. In addition to that, also subject to the Labour Relations Act. So in the event that something is not regulated by an existing collective agreement and it's considered to be a collective bargaining issue by either the employer or the union, it could be tabled in a relevant bargaining council. So just to make it clear that it's subject to collective bargaining when it comes to new matters. And then the other area that an issue was raised was that we in the draft bill, we provide that all collective agreements concluded in the bargaining structures of the public service are deemed to be ministerial determinations. Now, the reason for that was twofold. Firstly, currently, whenever an agreement is concluded, we have to issue a subsequent determination, which sometimes causes delays. And then secondly, we can also use now, if we deem it to be determinations, the enforcement provisions of the Public Service Act to enhance compliance with collective agreements. Now, there's actually a related provision that the concern was raised about we provided that the minister may issue determinations to supplement or elucidate these deemed determinations. And obviously the concern was that we may add some other conditions of service that are not agreed to. Now, the purpose of this clause was mainly to ensure proper implementation of these determinations. So the proposal was that we rather provide for directives to be issued by the minister, and that we make it clear that it's only for purposes of proper implementation, and also to stipulate that these directives may not derogate from the collective agreement in question. So it's basically for only for implementation. So my technical team told me that I can proceed with the next item. the next issue that in respect of which issues were raised were a number of provisions dealing with transfer. Now the first one, there's a section in the Act and also an amendment bill that deals with probation, and it stipulates that all appointments and transfer are made on probation, and the detail of such probation period, etc., will be prescribed by regulation. So the issue that was raised is that if the employer decides to transfer an employee, is it still proper to put that person on probation? The employee was not the one that led to the actual transfer. So so the proposal was made that when there's transfers on probation, that there's no requirement that it should be on probation. The only exception would be if the person is transferred and his school is currently on probation, that he completes that period of probation. But the regulations address the issue of where they transfer a person to a new position with different functions, either on a different level. Or on the same level, but it may be different functions that at least take that into account, that it shouldn't be to the detriment of the employee. So that is the proposal that we made. Just to further clarify, we in the past, the transfer section in the Public Service Act were also used when a person applies for a post in another department and is successful. So then he or she is transferred in terms of Section 14. But that's no longer necessary because there's a different clause which simply say, which is Section 14A that we propose, is that the person automatically transferred to a new department with retention of pensionable service, etc. So the transfer provision that we now have in Section 14 is only dealing with cases where the employer agrees or decides to transfer the employee. Then a further area that it particularly came up in the context of government agencies, but it was also raised in a broader context. Whenever functions are transferred by the Minister of Public Service and Administration or the Premier, transfer functions from one department to another. Now, in most cases, it would entail staff transfers as well, because the principle that we apply is that the resources must follow the transfer. Now, the proposal made from the consultant DPSA bilateral was that in such instances, really such staff transfers, there should be consultation in the relevant bargaining council. I think it's in any event, and hopefully in most instances, practice already that takes place, but this will put it beyond doubt that it is required that such consultation must take place. There's also a provision that deals with, and that's the one that I just referred to, is that when you move from one department to another on your own initiative, you apply for a post. We had the provision at the end which seemed to empower our minister to change the conditions of service. And that was not the intention, because you will move over with retention of your benefits and obviously you will get in the new higher salary, if it's a higher salary. So we said no, we could omit that particular phrase, and it was actually meant for another course. We just by mistake repeated it in this particular course. So those are the transfer related provisions. The next area relates to the area of content. The proposal from the bilaterals is that the proposed provision in the amendment bill be omitted and that we reverse to the current provision in the Public Service Act. Now you would recall that the proposed amendment in the bill introduces a 10 working day period. While the current provision act provides for one calendar month, so the proposal is that we revert to that. There's some other changes as well that we propose in the amendment bill, but the proposal from the bilateral is that we revert to the current provision in the Public Service Act, and that's the one calendar month instead of 10 working days. So I recall now, I think I left something out at the presentation. There's also a proposal in the bill pertaining to so-called supervening impossibility, which is in a document, we include it. The agreement was that that particular section proposed amendment be omitted from the bill. So we will include it in the final document. That's section 17.5. So at the bottom of page 19 of the bill, there is a subsection 5 dealing with supervening possibilities. So this is a new provision, it's not something currently regulated in the Public Service Act. The aim was to deal with issues of imprisonment and so on. We will just include it in a document that we will formally submit to the committee. Then another provision that concerns was raised about, and that's the provision that deals with outside in the right of work for employees. Now currently an employee could apply for permission to do such work, and we retained that provision in the amendment bill, but there is some adjustments that we are proposing in the bill. But in addition to that, the concern was raised that employees apply for outside and right of work, but they wait too long for ministers or MECs to approve or not to approve such requests. And then also the question is now what if we stipulate the period as we now suggest, what could happen? So we're making two proposals, certainly the period, to say that such a request must be decided on within 30 days. And then secondly, if the executive authority fails to make a decision within 30 days, then it would be deemed to have granted such permission. So if EAs want to refuse, they must do it within 30 days. That's the proposal. And then second, the grievance procedure, what we propose in the amendment law is that the problem that we currently are facing is that employees often approach either a bargaining council or even court without the department even knowing that the employee has a complaint about something. So what we propose in the amendment law is that before you can do that, you must first exhaust the internal grievance procedure, which is prescribed by the Public Service Commission, but only up to a certain level, and that is within the department, because if the department doesn't resolve the dispute, you can still approach the Public Service Commission. But we say at the very least, you must exhaust that procedure within the department, and only then you can either decide to defer the dispute to the bargaining council or institute court proceedings, or you can still proceed to the Public Service Commission. But the concern was raised now, what if the time frames of the grievance procedure are not adhered to by the department, because the commission's rule stipulates that within a particular period the department must do certain things, and if they don't, then you can proceed to the next level. So we just proposed an amendment to make it clear, if they don't adhere to those time frames within the department, then the employee can go ahead and refer the dispute to the bargaining council or institute court proceedings, whatever is appropriate.
Thank you. I just want to make a broad comment on all the issues that were raised subsequent to government agencies. Now,
the problem that we raise with these issues are that we find that they deal with conditions of employment. And we felt that it was a problem that issues didn't...
Are we done on the part of the department? I thought maybe you could allow the department to consider them on top of the asking. But I say you can then put that on as well.
Okay, the other area that was raised is the issue of reduction of salary. So there's a provision in the Act which say you can't reduce an employee's salary without his legal consent, and then in addition to that, by Act of Parliament, or what we now propose to add, it's not to add, but we just refined or clarified the provision dealing with collective agreement. So it's possible to reduce salaries by way of collective agreement. And then we also added that it could be reduced by means of material discrimination. Now the purpose of that was because in the case of senior management members, if there's a disciplinary case, the sanction that may follow may entail a reduction in salaries. But Kusatu raised the issue that this is it could be interpreted too broadly and could be abused. And we need then to realize that we don't need the provision, because in the case of sanctions, we reduce salaries, you in any event need the employee's consent, because it's an alternative to dismissal. So that amendment was proposed. then the last area respect of which we propose amendments is the regulation making powers of the Minister for Public Service and Administration. So the first proposal that we include is that if you read the regulations, it seems that the minister can make conditions of service on areas that are normally the subject matter of collective bargaining. But we will introduce that section by stipulating that the making of regulations are subject to the Labour Relations Act, so for collective bargaining on new matters, and then secondly, it's subject to existing collective agreements. And then there was concerns right about two particular paragraphs in the regulation section. And this is the provision that deals with restructuring and rationalization of departments. And the second one was the designation of particular categories of employees for the purpose of making different regulations. And the proposal is that these two clauses be omitted. The first one is actually, I think it's catered for elsewhere in the legislation, and obviously when it entails, it affects employees, then you have to follow the LRA operational requirements and provisions, so there's no need to regulate it by way of regulations. And the second one, the concern was raised, I think more in the context of government agencies, that we will have different conditions of service for these employees. Consider it's not necessary to include this. Then another area of concern was raised on is the use of casual or temporary or casual and temporary employees in the public service, because it's often abused by departments. That we include the provision that the minister must make regulations on restricting the employment of persons in temporary and casual capacity. But this will exclude obviously permanent employees or employees appointed on fixed-term contracts or appointed for specific tasks in terms of the Public Service Act. And then another area of concern was the issue of allowing them a provision in the regulation where you can approve deviations from the regulations, but with retrospective effect. We indicated that the proposal in the bill was that it can't be to the detriment of employees and it must be in the public interest. But there was still concern about the wording there, so we proposed that we rather, because that's the real purpose, because we need it sometimes to bring equity in, for instance, in the case of job grading, that it's backdated from the same date for all categories of employees, for instance, social workers. That we'd rather replace that wording with to say it's for purposes of obtaining equity or equality. So that is that provision. Okay, so that is the law.
Thank the now can listen to Kodato. For any other member of the technical team, if there are issues that would like to make you work. Well.
I was saying on we reached an agreement on the issues of what we felt was conditions of employment issues, and as Kosatu we felt that these should in reality be part of collective agreement and not part of acts. And we pointed out, because often it was said that but it's already existing in the existing act, so you know, they're just amending it. And the point we raised was that the Public Service Act was promulgated before the Labor Relations Act. Therefore, some of the conditions are included in the Act itself. But subsequently, when the LRA was promulgated, there is a section there dealing with public service employees. So our proposal is that all references to conditions of employment should not be part of the Act, but should be taken out of the Act and deemed as collective agreement until the next round of agreement and it becomes part of the agreement. What we ultimately ended up agreeing to is that those amendments that have been agreed to in this bill is because we're trying to deal with some of the difficulties and problems in the public service, but we will negotiate this when we have a discussion around the single public service, where we will again raise the issue and propose that we remove conditions of employment matters from acts. Because we find that it ends up becoming, we change conditions of employment by unilaterally changing or amending an act, and we find that was problematic.
Thank you very much. Are there other additions before we allow members to ask questions or clarity? No additions. As I've indicated that our chair may come in any time, that any time is arrived. So I'll continue leading the ship. He will come in when he realizes that the ship is now getting astray. Colleagues, any questions that we may want to raise? Maybe let me just raise some few soft and simple ones, knowing that my colleague will come with a little bit involving questions. I think firstly we need to appreciate this consultation, this bilateral between the department and COSATU. To say that it actually assists the process. So even as the portfolio committee, when we engage with this bill thoroughly, we will engage with the understanding that enough work has been done at the level of public participation, at the level of stakeholder participation. There will be no one who will say, I have not been involved in the process. My view has not been taken on board. We're not saying this only to the engagement between COSATU and the department, but we're praying that for all the stakeholders that participated and whose views we are going to consider as a portfolio committee when we deal with this matter. Just some few questions on the presentation. When we look at the agencies, for instance, what are we dealing with in terms of what is being proposed here? Are we dealing with name changes from an agency to a unit and a component? Or are we talking about meaningful changes? I'm raising this on the basis of what the original bill sought to achieve as an objective. If you look at the objective and then look at the move that you are introducing, to what extent can you say this is a meaningful move? When you look at what is being proposed as a component and a specialized unit, if one can say, using a simple arithmetic deduction, to say what is being proposed may suggest that if you add the government component and a specialized service delivery unit, that is going to equal the agency that was proposed. To what extent can you say that arithmetic deduction is not correct? Also, still on the question of the agency, and again, seen against the background of the objective, so do we think that with this proposal, the objective as was envisaged is realizable with the moves that are being introduced here today? In other words, can you talk and say if you are to look at objective and desirability of the bill, would you then say under the same circumstances, this move would suggest, right as we're still dealing with the question of the agency, but also as we're dealing with other issues as well, do you still see that desirability as if you would see it before these changes are being introduced? You know, I don't want to use, but maybe let me do. This move that is being tabled before the portfolio committee today, if we were to explain it, if someone will say, is it a compromise move? Is it a move at all? You know, some people may move 2 steps forward and then move 2 steps backwards, go back to the original position, and then suggest that there has been a movement. Of course, There have been some sweating, some effort made, but really in terms of if you want to talk about a direction, whether it's a progressive or what is a forward direction or backward one, you realize that there has actually been no move. Suppose there is a move in terms of what the two parties are presenting to the committee today. Like I said, is it a compromise? If yes, what in for? To what extent do you suggest? If you say it's a compromise, it means that it does take you a little bit out of what you intended to achieve. And if it's so that, what do you actually say? Because others may say, is it a compromise? Is there a move at all? Is it a camouflage? But what is it that we're dealing with as a portfolio committee? These are questions for clarity that will actually assist us as we deal with this thing. On the ARWOP, the remunerative work outside, there's a proposal of 30 days of consideration that if 30 days lapses, there is no decision, it will imply that actually the application is approved. What does that mean? When does the 30-day kick in? Are you talking about 30 days of submitting an application where there is no acknowledgement, where there is no communication between the applicant and those who are supposed to approve or not approve, or are you saying irrespective of that, irrespective of what is happening in between, some unforeseen maybe circumstances cropping up, those who are supposed to finalize the decision are engaged on other things, and there is communication in between. What does this 30 days mean? How do you explain the 30 days to us as a portfolio committee? So that when we decide to accept or reject your submission, it must not be a decision that we just stamp back, but it must be a decision that is actually informed. And I think clarity is necessary in dealing with this thing. These are the first simpler, soft, straightforward, short sentence. maybe let's take Mr. Millie, you want to come in. Let's take, I think if you are noting, both the department and for that, you're noting the process so that you can actually come back.
So a short add-on on what you asked about the agencies. I think if somebody just can explain to us how this unit and component will work in practice. How do they see the practice working of these two things? I've got other questions, but I think I must hold it back for later. Yes.
Dr. Maria.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is also connected to Mr. Mani's question. I really need some clarity. I mean, you have the component, you have the unit, and you have the department. I don't know who's responsible for performance and planning HR matters. And even with the feasibility studies, I think everything is going to be based on feasibility studies. And if you could give us an example, I mean, if you have the Department of Transport, and how would it operate? Maybe then it will enlighten us. And the other thing is, so much to deal with conditions of service and labor matters. I just want to know, has the Labor Portfolio Committee commented on this bill?
Fine. The last question is directed to us. It's our question. We'll deal with that as a committee. It's a legislative matter. Baba Mani Matomela, Baba Kumalo, and then Mr. Yule.
Thank you, Chairperson. Again, on the government agency. The proposal there is that, firstly, these government components may have assigned functions with Parliament approval. And again, we are saying the government notice is to list the functions and operational arrangements. I'm not sure the answer, what is it that we want to achieve, because it's like we want to assign specific functions by listing them. But at the same time, we're opening up and saying that they may have other assigned functions. So what is it that we want to achieve there? I mean, if we want, we know exactly what we expect this government component to do. Let's list the functions and end there. Or if we want it to only perform those functions that would be done through Parliament's approval, then let's stick to that. Unless if by assigning functions with Parliament's approval, we are envisaging something that may be extraordinary. And what is this extraordinary thing that we are envisaging? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, sir. Mine is on page 5, Mr. President. I'm very worried about the tensions and the instability that may arise in the department on this proposal. If you look at this one, it says the executive authority may delegate human resources powers into public service only to the head of the unit that is not the head of the department. The problem here, Chairperson, is that it may cause tension. So if I'm the head of a department and I'm the ultimate accounting officer, and then there are certain powers that are delegated to a unit head who might happen to be my junior, but my concern is that it may cause instability in the department. Maybe we must get started on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yule.
Mr. Chair,
I want to continue where you stopped. What bothers me here is not the police chief now. It's this secrecy meetings behind closed doors. Where if somebody is responsible for the amendment in this bill. Now, if I look at the submissions of Kutatu, and then they go sit 11 o'clock in the evening with the department behind closed doors, and me as a politician, as a member of this committee, which are supposed to hear to their submissions, aren't involved. And then the PSC also argue with the GPSA on this bill. Then something is fishing here. Somebody is bullshitting me here. I don't know. Because whilst we must, as a committee, must sort out the submissions of Kasabi, and then they reach agreement.
You know, if we are in Parliament at a sitting, I would say, is it parliamentary, in the chamber, I would say, is it parliamentary to use the word bullshit.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm not wrong. Okay, thanks.
But while you're sitting here, I asked a question yesterday, in a lighter note, whether they got something from government on the salary negotiations or what. Is there was there agreement made between them? Because all of a sudden, they come with the agency, then they say we call it this and we call it that, but the real fact for the matter is nothing has been changed. And that is what concerns me here in this book, especially when we talk about labor. I would like, as a member of this committee, to be fully informed of what's happening with this book. Because I mean, this committee must report to Parliament on this bill, on this amendment. And I'm not satisfied the things that are happening behind closed doors. And then they come with, we sit here with us, things like amendments that are changed 2-3 words, and then we say they are satisfied. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Before we take the next round, Let me just say, and before the two parties may respond, that there are some of the questions that it is us we have to respond to, and I will represent that category of us to try and respond. The first question is the issue about the Labour Portfolio Committee. When this bill was tabled in Parliament and it went through a stage of first reading, we had advised by all interested structures of Parliament, the portfolio committees at that level involved. You realize that this bill may, the same may be said about safety and security, the same may be said about other committees as well. So that first fight was there, and as a collective, as Parliament represented by the various committees there, we are going to also engage this bill when the committee reports in Parliament after consideration. So that process is taken care of. On the issue of secret meetings, let me also respond to that, Mr. Yuli, so that I said you are keen to now utilize this law when we go to the second round to come with questions of clarity on what is being submitted here. To say that that there is nothing untoward in terms of the arrangements that are actually going on. As you remember that the legislative process has various stages. You have your executive stage and your legislative stage. And there are areas. Let me say, not areas. The question of participative consideration cannot be compromised at any level. Now, there is nothing wrong if you find that, say, for instance, structures that were supposed, that are part of the NEDLAC process, may find a reason to engage even post the tabling in Parliament. That's why when the office of the chairperson was actually consulted, to then say there is a need to deal with that process, we did not find anything wrong about that. So it is not a secret for that. It's not a process of trying to stop the portfolio committee. This portfolio committee will consider this bill irrespective of what goes on in terms of consultations that are taking place. So let us not be scared about that. And let us not feel that anything that gets done in that arrangement is not accommodated in our complex democratic process of public participation. So I wanted to just clarify that one so that your adrenaline may actually have revealed to settle so that we would then go. Now let me hand over to the two stakeholders. But I want to stress also that we are saying that we are asking questions for clarity. Even where it will appear that we are actually getting into serious discussion through our presence, you will have to bear with us. We actually, that is how you get clarity sometimes. That's how we get clarity because we are going to actually deal with this thing. Over to you.
So what you're saying to me, Mr. Chair, is that if the committee after the day they are going to ask their questions and make rectifications, whatever, we as the committee, we as the DPSA, as Labour, Labour going to be satisfied that we go with one unified view into Parliament. If tomorrow we start pushing for let's change this, this is not right, that is not right, are they going to be satisfied?
Thank you. If the committee will so decide to want to confer with any other committee, there will be no one who will stop us doing that. So that is something that the committee will have to apply its mind on, and it may not be the business of this meeting. So I think that is what we need to stress. The other thing is that we are not presented here with a proposed amendment. We are not presented here with a new bill or an amended version of the bill. We are presented here with input during the public hearing stage, which is genuine and legitimate input. If we so consider as a committee that these inputs that are here are going to be factored in to be part of portfolio committee amendments to the bill, who will do that. So let us not view the contribution today as them saying now. Some people said in somewhere come with amendments. No. The question of public participation is that stakeholders will come and appear before the committee. They will share their views. But before coming, we are not worried about the caucuses that they have. To structure their views. We are not worried about that. It's a caucus. If you're organized, you can't go and make a submission before you agree that this is a submission that if we say as COSATU are submitting, they would say actually have to do. When we reached the submission by COSATU, we did not hear anywhere where they said our original submission is withdrawn. By implication is that they have the original submission, and then they have this discussion. They are coming with a view. It is good. We are going to look at that. And the department is not saying we are withdrawing the bill as table, but they are saying after consultation, during the public participation stage, this is what they are presenting before us. And if it makes sense, it will be up to this committee to consider that. So that's why I just have to actually then say let it be like that. Because somebody, I'm not talking about human beings, somebody said to me yesterday that, no, what is this thing? What's happening now? Is this committee now going to just attack and become a rubber stamp? We will not rubber any stamp and we will not stamp any rubber. As a portfolio committee, we are going to do our work representing Parliament, and will represent Parliament for what Parliament ought to be in terms of the constitution. So let's be at it. Relax. The submissions are here. Can we get them, and then we go to the next round? That's the minute. Are you burning? Is it a burning question?
I just want to ask the department and the minister or whoever.
did they also reach agreement with Imatu and all the other stakeholders who make presentations to this committee? Did they also went through the same stuff like they did with Kusat to try and reach agreements, etc., etc.?
Sure.
That's very important for me to know.
That's a very important question. But can I ask my chapter and the Kusat to dedicate to just be part of one meeting? What we are saying is that we are faced today with a presentation. Can we ask questions for clarity based on the presentation that we are receiving? If Imatu will approach the department and say we want to talk to you, or the department approach Imatu and say we want to talk to you outside the caucus to influence the committee, and the department say no to Imatu but it has said yes to COSATU, and we get to know as a portfolio committee that the department has done that, then we'll have reason to get the department to account, because that will then be selective. So let us not get into the business of Imatu and the business of, if that need is there, I'm saying Imatu because you mentioned that. And what I'm saying is that if someone will say Sanko wants to have a meeting with the department, the other one says the ratepayers association feel that they've got interest in the bill, they want to talk to the department, and the department say we can't talk to you when they have talked to COSATU, then that will be an issue. But it's not an issue for this meeting. Some of these things we can handle them at our level as a committee. Can we allow the department to respond and COSATU to respond to the questions that have been raised so that we can take the second round?
I'll address some areas and then Ms. Clark will also follow me and then Clark can also respond. First of all, the question was asked about now, is there a real difference between government agencies and government consultants? In the presentation it indicates what are the differences. Just to revert to it, in case of a government component, the main difference now is that it provides a feasibility study, which must recommend its establishment. And then the other key area which I highlighted is the fact that these institutions or components are not allowed to, in terms of the proposal, perform functions in respect of housing, healthcare, food, water, social security, children, and education. So the functions are more limited than what is proposed in respect of government agencies. In respect of the other areas, there is no difference, and it's correct. We actually had some concerns about earlier on, even about the name government agencies, but it led to the impression that we're trying to outsource government functions outside the public service, while these are institutions that deliver functions within the public service. And that's both true in the case of the government component, what we propose, and also the government agency. As it comes to the specialized service delivery units, we also indicated what are the differences and the first way, the way it's created are differently. And it's something that's operating within the department. And then there's two kinds of delegations, the HR delegations. We don't compel it, but if the EA, which is the political head, decides to delegate, it should be to the head of that unit. And that's not that unique. It's possible to do it currently, that external sides can delegate functions, not necessarily to the head of the department, but to someone else in the department. But now we, in the case of the respect of the unit, we require that it should only be the head of that unit. And then the other important area is the provision for financial delegations from the accounting officer to the head of that unit. And we indicated there would be the proposal that it could only be revoked in special circumstances. And then secondly, I think that's one of the later questions, is that in terms of accountability, we do acknowledge that this is a
a variation on the current provision of relating to the accountability of an accounting officer, and that therefore it should be a special provision for accountability of the head of that unit in respect of the financial delegations. But in respect of the HR delegations, it comes from the political head. It's not the head of the department that accounts for those particular functions. There may be some, but the majority of HR functions in terms of the Public Service Act are based in the political head and not in the administrative head. Then, in respect of the issue of reduction, sorry, of outside and relative work, I think that the issues that were raised in the question, there may be doubts about, you know, if you submit a request for permission to do outside work, if you submit incomplete information. Now, can they say you didn't submit the request or not? So what we want to do is maybe want to consider if this is acceptable to the committee, the proposal in total, is that we say that the pre-sub information must be submitted. So sometimes employees submit a request, but they don't indicate what kind of work, so the employer can't assess what it is entailed. And then once the pre-sub information is submitted, then it's 30 days from that date, so then it will be clear. Then the issue about the functions of both the component and the unit and the question raised in respect of assigned functions. The assigned functions we provided from the respect of both of them, as indicated in a document. But those are not the only functions that such a component or unit may have. It may not have assigned functions at all. We listed the kind of functions they could have. It could be original functions that are imposed on that unit or component by legislation, or it could be delegated functions. I'm not talking about HR financial, but line functions, actually the actual service delivery functions. It could be delegated functions from either the head, the political administrative head of that department to the unit or to the component, or it could be assigned functions. There's only one type of function it could have. Such unit or component could have, or it could be even functions that are transferred by the Minister of Public Service and Administration in terms of the Public Service Act to that unit. So there's a range of possible functions that these two kinds of institutions could have, and not only one kind, and as I said, it could be that in some instances there's no assigned functions. We just provide for that as an option, and because in some cases it may be appropriate.
Yeah, to develop further on the input, in the debate around the whole aspect of the special purpose vehicles, which in certain instances are already there because of the lacuna that exists, it definitely had to be addressed, and one of the questions was in terms of giving examples in relation to the intention of the legislation. Currently, there are provincial growth and development strategies within the provincial department specifically, where there is a coordination of the economic growth on a horizontal level in those particular provinces, and they're actually transactional mandates that have to be carried through. So what departments or what seniors officers are doing are coming up with instances like training institutes to basically drive the provincial growth and development strategies. But those are not necessarily located in any specific way in terms of the legislative framework. Another example in terms of the aspects of the transactional mandates or cross-cutting mandates, which are not detracting in any way from the legal or constitutional mandates of a specific department, is an example of Starting provinces come up with what they're calling an ECD agency. If the legislative framework was there, it would be an ECD component. And the ECD component has got a mandate which Department of Health is responsible for, Social Welfare is responsible for, as well as Education. Now, it's not detracting from the legislative mandate, but it's acting as an enhancement vehicle to deal with the efficiencies, the economies of scale, as well as the effectiveness, to make sure that by the time that a learner reaches school at 6 years old, what Department of Health was supposed to do from birth until 18 months, what Social Welfare was supposed to do in terms of taking care of the social welfare issues, and what Education is supposed to do in the foundation phase, have been enhanced by some sort of delivery vehicle. We also get in instances in transport, specifically Gauteng as an example as well, with the rollout of the Gautrain, which means that there are period mandates for particular deliverables. FIFA is also an example in the sense that they, without having a ministry for FIFA, there are also cross-sectional and transversal mandates in terms of requiring some sort of government component to drive that as a period mandate for the duration. There are also aspects of innovation hubs from an economic perspective in the provincial, on a horizontal level, in provincial departments, but there are no legal vehicles to assist with those particular, you know, those particular agencies or what would one call a focal point to deal with transactional mandates. And those would be the examples in terms of what has come up. But I think in the debate, there was a really strong aspect of our obligation to ensure that the second degree rights that are enshrined by the Constitution are not proliferated through or fragmented through such vehicles. But we clear that there needs to be some sort of vehicle to deal with it, but still with the necessary competency of oversight from government, because with the agencies that currently exist, we've got independent boards, and that has created a problem in relation to conditions of service and also the mandates, which are moving in certain instances away from our own mandates. The aspect also in terms of the 30 days, generally where it is applicable already in the education sector, it's a matter of just directives and delegations in terms of a focal point for authority. So 30 days is not necessarily a problem in relation to the application of the mind of the execution authority, you know, to the categories that have been determined that are specific and acceptable for remunerative work for those categories of employees. Thanks.
Yeah. The question raised initially by the chairperson, is this a compromise, is this a name change? I've also had sleepless nights around that, wondering whether at Kosatu we might have compromised or sold out or but if we look at what our problems were with agencies, government agencies, and they ranged from the issues of fragmentation. So for us the problem was if you're creating more and more structures to provide service delivery and giving them more and more autonomy, financial management, human resource autonomy, we found that was problematic because it's taking away kind of control, political control, political coordination, and it's almost in a way kind of commercializing or moving towards privatizing service delivery, which we raised as a problem. The second thing we raise as a problem is that if we look at the tendency, we found that if you look at the social security agencies, they're the creating agencies, which is outside the Act. And these agencies are beginning to have independent functions, independent ways of dealing with things. The second thing we looked also, there was the FET Colleges Bill, where employees of FET Colleges, their condition, their contract of employment is removed from the state and to the individual college. So we were looking at all of this and saying we're having problems in a sense, although the department kept saying we're keeping staff of agencies in the public sector and we're keeping them within the collective bargaining structure. But our fears were that when we looked at agencies in other countries, that as these developed, they changed. They became structures on of their own,
with laws, and it became more and more difficult for control, accountability, and these are the problems we raise. We're saying, you know, if you have an agency in a province and the provincial head has a different perspective, can that person then give powers which we're not intended to give? And those are the kind of questions we're in. And for us now dealing with and I must say that one of the big problems we raised was that the bill was tabled in Parliament without consultation of stakeholders. And government kept saying the department kept saying that it's a technical bill. And we were saying, if you're talking about changing structures of service delivery, that can't be technical. That is dealing with service delivery issues, it's dealing with labor relations issues, and we felt it should have been tabled at NEDLAC before it was tabled in Parliament. And we did say that we were considering dealing with Section 77, and we did say that we were considering getting legal advice on getting a court order to prevent the bill from going through before it is tabled at a structure where we can discuss and negotiate it. And on that basis, we were then approached to say let's have these discussions. Now on the new proposal of changing government agencies to government components, we feel that, I mean, firstly, they're not going to provide direct service delivery in social economic issues. So they can't create a hospital to be a government component. It is a specialized unit for a specialized function, and it could be temporary, So for us, we felt that it was comfortable to then deal with it in that way. Secondly, there's the issue of the units, which are dedicated or specialized service delivery units. There also we then continued in those discussions, raising the same problems with that we had with agencies. And for us, it was important to deal with the issues of accountability, deal with the issues of political oversight, management and control. And in a sense, firstly, they're no longer separate and outside departments, they are like a unit inside a department. And we kind of looked at what is the levels of autonomy, what kind of functions can be assigned and levels of control, accountability, and oversight, and we felt comfortable that our concerns have been dealt with in this process. So in a sense, yes, I probably have sleepless nights for a month still, but I actually feel that we didn't. Not just a compromise. I mean, in the discussions, it was agreed. You see, because if you look at some of the questions here, is give an example, explain how it's going to work, which is what we also tell us what is the purpose for it. Why do you want to call a hospital a government agency?
Can I call the department directly for one meeting? But I'm a very flexible and simple person. If you want to focus, you can suggest we can have one.
So in the discussion, we also then kind of to listen to, okay, this is the rationale for it. And they also then said, but when they're listening to our concerns, so we're kind of finding that maybe one, if we come a bit closer, we can deal with everybody's concerns. Because I can understand the concern that in a hospital, because you have to go through the department to secure again, you can six months before you get your stationery. So I can understand a need to deal with that, but for us, for the key thing was we didn't want to fragment and we didn't want to take away overall control. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Department, and thanks for that too for the response. So first, if in your response you realize that there are some areas where there are gaps you don't have ready answers on, we will also note those gaps, and when our time comes, we'll provide answers to those gaps. That was on a lighter note. Can we take the second round of questions? No, I'm just acknowledging you. Mr. Guavarda, Matomela, Yulin. Mr. Mini, are you there? Mr. Mini. Okay. Okay.
I just want to check whether Combat Kakane was recognized because of his position as Induna, because I arrived before that I was not recognized.
Exactly that. And you know, I'm waiting for your hand. I'm sorry, I didn't actually. When you come in, there was someone. I'm very sorry. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Chairperson, just a small clarity on page 4 of the slide, government agency, slide 3. The paragraph which says, I don't know what you call it. Let me call it for convenience, bullet 3. It says, may not perform functions in respect of housing, health care, food, water, social security, children, and education. And in the next page, bullet 3 says, may perform functions regarding health care, education, etc. Could that be clarified? What does it mean?
That's why I said earlier on, if someone uses an arithmetic deduction and say a specialized unit like the government component equals an agent, to what extent it is then free. Okay, think about it. I think that's not it from the point. Baba, Mama, what's going on?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know as to what is this that has persuaded the department to reduce, I mean, to revert back to the provisions of the Public Service Act with regards to abscondment, because they had advanced very good reasons for reducing that time period to 10 working days. Thank you.
Thank you. Baba Julius.
So, I just want clarity on this outside work for you. You say a time period where how long a person can work on outside job. The other question is, if can he work just outside job just after hours or whatever? I don't know. Because we need the time period, how long can he work? He can go up over 3, 4, 5 years. We're going to work on his post. Thank you, Jeff.
1 hour. So that we have this as the last opportunity. There being no hope. I want him.
Thank you, Chair. Regarding the question of the application for outside remuneration, I just want to find out from the department. when it comes to the SMS, if application is granted, will that not affect the RIP, especially as the team manages the data strategy, and then you are allowed to go and do somewhere? How will you deal with the RIP in question of their contract, as well as the performance and service delivery? Thank you.
Thank you very much. They in the bill, the conference of powers to the agency was said to be in three different approaches. Either you assign, you delegate, or and that also we will then explain to what extent is an agency involved. When you look at this two structures that are being proposed here, is that the conference, the three options in conferring the authority, is that applicable to all, or is it applicable to some? And if not, if to all, which are part of the all, I mean, if to some, which are part of the some, and which may not be part of that. Maybe one last, and when it comes to, it is a specialized unit that you are saying that this is structure within the department, is not anything outside, just like that. Do we need an act to do that? If that's the issue. Is the existing legislation not providing room that if you want to improvise, if you want to come out with a strategic arrangement, organizationally speaking, you may do 1, 2, 3. Is there really a need to do that, or just like part of because it's part of this bill, the other things may need an act to be amended, but this one is a by the way thing. But Papa, can we take it really strongly? When some of us went to school to study particular studies, others went to study law. can we be assisted in that regard? This is the last round. Can we get responses to?
Just before,
yes.
I also would require in the same slide on page 5, bullet 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm not sure whether I was not listening carefully. It says it's subject to relevant treasury approval. Accounting officer of department must delegate all financial functions in terms of public finance management act. Was it supposed to be March or May in the first instance? And secondly, I didn't quite understand if that happens, if those functions are delegated as proposed, what then becomes the function of the accounting officer of the department if all powers are delegated that?
I will mainly respond to the questions on the government component and the specialized unit. The first question relates to the socio-economic functions. Now, what we're proposing is that in the case of a government component which is outside the department but still in the public service, that they may not perform these socio-economic functions which are listed, but in the case of a service delivery unit within the department, they may perform these socio-economic functions. So I think that comes to the chief, you know, if you take the two together, then it equalizes in a way the government agency. But it's now two different kinds of structures. Then the further question I could ask about
Just the last question, maybe while we're on this slide, the issue of treasury and for the issue of accountability. The only financial delegations that will be to the head of the unit is only in relation to the financial powers that respect of that unit. It's not the whole department. So the rest of the department will still be under the responsibility of the accounting officer. It's only for this unit that there will be financial delegations, and it was intended to be a must. And then related to this question is, the question is, now can't we provide for this unit within the department in current legislation? Now the last two indications, well, bullets, there's no provision that say when you create such a unit, then the EA, the political head, may only delegate to the head of such unit. There's no such provision currently in legislation. And then secondly, there's no provision for compulsory financial delegation to the head of a unit if we create, for instance, a branch. There's no provision for that. And also by, first of all, listing these units, and secondly, having a charter listing their functions, you give some statutory recognition to these units and the fact that they're operating within the framework. And it gives some certainty as to how they operate. Because the difficulty is, we don't legislate on it in the case of financial functions, the new accounting officer may simply come and withdraw those delegations if he doesn't like the arrangement. So to give stability to this unit, at least for the period, there is a process to disestablish the unit officer as well. And then also in this context, just to reiterate what we indicated in briefing sessions on the government agencies, we do see this as an important tool, both of these, to prevent the creation of unnecessary public entities outside the public service, first of all. And secondly, it's an important tool, once we conduct a review of public entities, to bring back some of them within to the public service, either as a government component or as a specialized unit within the department.
Yeah, well, just to add on, in terms of developing that response, also in specifically with provincial legislatures, it would be much easier in terms of ring-fence program funding under the conditional grant in terms of allocating money to such a special delivery unit, if it has already been authorized and it goes through the treasury processes from the financial perspective. It makes it a much easier way in terms of ring-fencing money. The other aspects, the remunerative work, the primary employment contract is with us as the employer. And generally, any outside remunerative work is a secondary employment contract where the employee has to get permission. And with professionals, a number of professionals, there are aspects of their own professional registration that expect them to continue as practicing specialists. If one is registered as a clinical psychologist, there's an expectation that there's a degree of a certain amount of hours per year that you should at least be engaged in. So if you are in a particular job where there's no opportunity given, there has to be flexibility in giving you an opportunity in your own private time, which could be on a Saturday morning, to offer such a service. As long as it does not conflict with your primary employment contract and there's no conflict of interest. The other aspect, for instance, specifically, we've just come back from KPM, and one of the debates is the aspect of practicing academics within the public service and the whole aspect of a revolving door aspect. So to create opportunities where one is lecturing in over a weekend outside your own employment time, permission must be granted as long as you're going to get remuneration. But the advantage for the public service is that the transfer of knowledge from the university side and the skill that we've acquired, we are concretizing the whole issue of knowledge creation around the aspects of public administration. So there are instances that lend themselves extremely well for permission to be granted for remunerative work outside and hence
you know, it needs to be regulated in the way in which it's done, and the measure in terms of making sure that there's no conflict of interest and that it doesn't detract from your original, you know, contract of employment. The aspect of the whole time period, that will depend from department to department in the sense that in certain instances, the executing authority would say every year you would have to reapply, or every 3 years you would have to reapply to see whether it has impacted in any way on your original contract of employment. But those are clearly defined according to the needs of the employer, and as long as it does not detract in any way from the original contract of employment, specifically in relation to conduct, in relation to areas of conflict. The aspects of escondment, in terms of the debate, there were further debates that we had taken from a labor, constitutional labor relations perspective, in the sense that when one is dealing with the aspects of escondment, which is different from unauthorized leave of absence, and the two are normally confused within the public service, because the unauthorized leave of absence is someone deliberately is not going to work, but you know where they are. They've made you know where they are, but they are being supercilious, and supercilious is contemptuous arrogance displayed by the employee in that they are not fulfilling their contractual obligation and they're not coming to work. Therefore, you've got to act in terms of the Labor Relations Act because you know that they are not there and they basically are deviating. The aspect of abscondment is where the individual has deserted their particular employment. They are compromising the constitutional rights of somebody else who must receive a public service. And hence, the employer must have a tool to deal with a legal instrument to make sure that where there has been the recognition of a desertion and you can't find the individual, then you need a legal instrument to make sure that you can bring somebody else to do the work with someone has absconded. The 30 days was reasonable from an administrative justice perspective, you know, in hindsight, in the sense that we have an obligation to apply the Audi Alter and Partium rule to find out exactly where the person is. If we fail to do that, we got to then apply, and the communication network is not that jacked up, specifically in rural areas, to send a registered letter to really find out where the individual is. And then the aspect of the 30 days was a more reasonable period in terms of trying to really satisfy ourselves that the individual has absconded and basically deserted, and as you said, well, has gone to go and work in the UK and we can't locate that particular individual. And then we found that there would be less legal repercussions over a period of 30 days in that we would have sufficiently tried to locate the whereabouts of that particular individual. And therefore, the 10 days was slightly unreasonable in hindsight in terms of trying to locate the individual. If we came and found out where the individual is 20 days later, and we've already applied the rule 10 days, it becomes untidy in terms of dealing with the legal labor processes in that instance. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Baba Kumar, I think that was the last, but it's fine. It's fine.
Around the grievance procedure. It reads that a grievance may be referred to or be done in the according to grievance procedures of the Public Service Commission. But it says it may refer this to the bargaining council. The question that I'm asking is if it must or may, and if it is may, does it imply that an employee can then also follow the common law, not necessarily the statutory result of the transfer? Thank you.
Fine. You are right. Your question was not responded to.
Thank you, Chair. Well, the employee can decide whether he wants to refer a labor dispute or he can go to court. That's why we also say all institute court proceedings. Or he can even decide to proceed and ask the Public Service Commission to try to resolve the dispute. So if it's meant to be made, we can't prescribe to an employee what he or she wants to do. Sorry, Chair, there was another question I think that you raised about the kind of functions that
a component could have a survey and a unit. The range of functions are actually what we propose is exactly the same for the two, with the one exception is that the component may not provide those socioeconomic functions.
Thanks. Any follow-up? I mean, in terms of a question that is not responded to. Fine. Thanks, colleagues, and thanks to the department, thanks to Professor. We questions for clarity by their nature just gives an opportunity to the party that responds to explain oneself. May not necessarily be that we get the answers that we wanted. We're going to engage on that. The meeting's not adjourned yet. I see people are taking. I'm thanking these participants for the first part of our meeting. But let me indicate that on this presentation, that there may be areas where you corrected some of the issues. If you could go and work on that and submit the corrected version so that the committee, when we get to consider your submission, will consider the corrected one. Also, it's a slide presentation. It may not be having as much detail. So to assist anyone who you know, when you do a slide presentation, you write the main points and you talk to the slide presentation. And in a situation where you are no longer there, talk to the slide presentation, then you find that slide presentation may not tell the full story. We always require what we refer to as a narrative summary. If we could actually have that, we'd like to actually consider So that's one area that one would then say, let's actually deal with this thing. Of course, if we need more clarity on some of the issues that we consider, we will always come back to you to then say, this is the area where we need to address. The department also has indicated that they would like to not only reflect at this meeting, not only reflect on interaction that they had with Consatu, but they would also like to reflect on interactions they had with the SAFs and the other entities that the Premier's office, which talking about that by the way, Northwest and then stuff like that, maybe also with the Public Service Commission. I'm not sure, Jefferson, the meeting is actually coming slightly, gradually towards you, that you take over. But although the view that the interaction with the Premier's office, the interaction with the actual government entities, if that could be responded to all when you actually respond to your interaction with the Public Service Commission. As a committee, we are scheduled to meet the Public Service Commission on Wednesday next week. I'll talk to that later on. But I'm bringing this point now so that I make sense to what I'm suggesting. But if you strongly feel that you want to get into it now, it's fine. But I would suggest that maybe you deal with this issue when you interact with us or on that issue. As I'm allowing them to officially focus inside here, officially. Let me address the colleagues, members of the committee, on what is lying ahead of us. We're supposed to have a meeting. Actually, you'll remember that today we're supposed to be having this meeting with the Public Service Commission. The Public Service Commission has requested that they will only be able to see us next week, so we're going to utilize our Wednesday slot next week to interact with the Public Service Commission, assuming that all other things remain the same. No changes. So that is what we will see. That's the first thing. Tomorrow, as you will remember, that we're supposed to be having a meeting. And the business of tomorrow was to allow the department to actually take us through in terms of feedback with the interactions and stuff like that. So we are no longer going to have that meeting tomorrow, because the business of tomorrow's meeting was actually supposed to be what we are dealing with today. So that's the announcement. I see that the department is ready. You want to actually address the issue of the South African Police Service today. Do you think so? It's your
I think I was listening to the question raised by, I don't know, by one of the committee members on grievous material. The response was saying that it was supposed to be marked, but it was put.
It was supposed to be made.
Made. I'm sure it's made. No, I'm happy because I dealt with that May most of my time when I was a state, which has put us in a very critical to go to court and say, no, it doesn't take much, it must make. So if you think we are so that, then I'm happy.
Yeah.
But we don't do it diligently, it's a problem.
Yeah. Okay. So thanks, it's a very good question. So far, if they propose it must be in May. So if the committee would like to utilize the experience, when we consider and change it to mass, we may do that. The department is saying that they are ready to take us through the stuff. They are interacting with the South African Police Service. Over to you.
With your permission, we will deal with both police and North Police. It's not very long. Just to indicate, first of all, with South African Police, we had a couple of bilaterals with them. And this came from requests, you know, from them to interact with them, as well as in the case of North Police, the Portfolio Committee requested us at a meeting on the 20th of February to interact with North West Premier. On their submission. Now, in the case of police, they've raised a couple of issues. From the submission, they might see many issues, but we responded to the others already to their satisfaction. So there was remained a few issues that we discussed with them. And you will see the copies that we attached. It includes both the proposals that we made to the commissioner and then their response to that, you know, that's acceptable. Now, the first main area that they raised is the concern about the power for the Minister of Public Service and Administration to apply employment practices under the Public Service Act to sectors with their own employment law. Now, police is one of them. Education is another one.
There is an intervention that we have all been as democratic and very cooperative, but we ignore that there is always this body that may demand a break. So I'm told that there has been a caucus. Some caucuses can take place right in the meeting, with the meeting in progress. But so a caucus has ruled that will take a 5-minute biological break. Over to the question.
Thank you, Chief. As indicated, we will give feedback on interactions with police and the North West Premier. In the case of the police, the main concern they raised is a power for the Minister of Public Service and Administration to apply employment practices under the Public Service Act to sectors with their own employment laws. Now, those sectors are defense, police, intelligence services, and educators. Now, in our deliberations with the police, we came up with an alternative proposal for the committee's consideration, and that is that we limit the employment practices, because it's quite a wide
concept, if you look at the definition in section 1, that it be limited to salary adjustments, salary scales or levels, pay incentives and pension benefits. And then also that, that these things are aligned not through discrimination by the Minister of Public Service and Administration, but rather that before a particular minister in one of these sectors make a determination, they must approach a committee of ministers who must concur with these determinations, and then it's limited only to these areas. As we propose that the committee consists of the Minister of Finance, Minister of Public Service and Administration, and then also all the sector ministers. It's actually currently an informal committee of cabinet that operates like this, and so it's just institutionalizing in this committee. So this is a proposal on this issue that was raised by police. And then they raised some other areas, and the one was the issue of when it comes to the appointment of heads of departments, in the case of the SAPS Police Commissioner and also all the heads of intelligence services, they are appointed in terms of the Constitution directly and not in terms of the Public Service Act. So they requested that we include the provision which makes it clear that this section dealing with heads of departments are subject to the Constitution. And then I also raised an issue pertaining to, because in the clause where we deal with, you know, what legislation will prevail in the case of conflict between the Public Service Act and sector legislation, we use the term law, and whether we shouldn't also refer to national directives. Now, we indicated that in view of the definition of the Interpretation Act of law, which is quite broad, this national directive will also be covered if it's subordinate legislation, so there's no need for an amendment in this respect. And then I also requested that we, because the proposal in amendment bill is that when it comes to deeming collective agreements to be determinations of the Minister of Public Service and Administration, that we also extend this to the sectors. So, for instance, if there's a collective agreement in the Safety and Security Collective Bargaining Council, that it also be extended to them. Now, we just consider this, but we don't think it's appropriate to include it in the Public Service Act. It should be done in the South African Police Service Act, and if they want something similar for educators, it should be in the Employment of Educators Act. And that this is not the appropriate place for including this, and then they just concur with this proposal, the suggestion that it not be included. And then lastly, they raised a concern about the amendments that proposed in the bill in respect of the political rights of employees, which is now in section 36. They have their own provision in their own act that deals extensively with political activities of police members. The concern was, will our section override it? And we said no, because even in terms of the current act, if there's conflict between a sector employment law and Public Service Act, the sector employment law will prevail. So there's no need for an amendment. Now these are the amendments pertaining to the police service. As indicated, attached to the slide presentation, you would find a letter from our Director General to the Police Commissioner and also his response. Maybe to come back to the earlier proposal, which was the main area of contention, is that they also said, yeah, well, I can see now that this provision is not only limited to particular sectors that we cover, education, police, and defense. And it's not limited to one particular sector. So that's a proposal, which is, if I could suggest that maybe first discuss the police service issue and then open the other questions of clarity.
Thanks, government. Is there any comment on the issue? Any question for clarity? you're saying that the new proposal is that the interministerial committee comprising of central or key portfolios like finance, public service, but also for the sector content. Okay.
Just to make, I just want to understand, what is the present situation?
Currently, there is no such a power to, whenever the police wants to determine salaries, or other terminations, they can do it on their own offices subject to collective bargaining. There's no requirement to, or legal requirement to get approval from our minister or from any cabinet committee. They can proceed, although there's a practice that developed to approach this mandate committee of cabinet that I referred to, but there's no legal requirement to obtain approval before they make terminations. The main aim of the amendment was to secure some level of alignment between the sectors and the general public service. Because otherwise people will, the job hopping is a problem. If you can get a better salary in admissive post in the police, you will move there instead of remaining in your current department.
What was the problem all along when there was moaning about lower salaries? So why couldn't they just simply decide on the gains?
Maybe then that point, as Honorable Member Kakan is saying, in other words, you are then saying that the involvement of sector ministers will also consider the uniqueness of these portfolios. That may suggest that you don't necessarily have to adopt a one-size-fits-all approach, but you may have to consider a specific circumstances, so the involvement. No, it's fine. So. No, no, there was not necessarily okay. I was saying that the point you are raising.
I think on this one.
Yes. Okay. So you are saying that in terms of ministerial determinations, in other words, if this goes through, you would then be talking about this determination by this inter-ministerial committee and stuff like that.
Just to clarify, that the determination will still be made by the relevant minister, for instance, in the case of police, the Minister of Safety and Security, but before he can make the determination, he must seek the concurrence of this committee. So we're not taking away the original power that they have in terms of their own legislation. In terms of I can't speak generally about the complaints from the police, but obviously it's often an issue of budget. Given the current weight of negotiations, it's a very contentious area. But I can also indicate that in the case, the problem that we had, in one instance, they gave high increases to SMS members and the rest of the public service. And obviously that created problems. So that's just another reason for. But I think it's probably, it's a matter between Treasury and the police. But this is also, I think, an important committee to secure coordination between the sectors. And as you indicated, that they still allow for a special dispensation for particular sectors being justified.
Hello. Yes, ma'am.
I just want to check around the salary level, as the bonuses will also follow suit, because you find that in one department, the bonus for performance is different from the other. Will that be also structured to be uniform in all the departments? Thanks.
We supposed to cover this as well through this committee by using the term pay incentives, because they use different terms in different sectors, so it's supposed to be covered by that term.
Yes.
Can we now move to the Northwest?
In the case of the Northwest, my colleague will deal with the issue. Just to indicate, we looked at the submission to the portfolio committee, and then the minister wrote a letter to the premier addressing all the areas that they raised. And obviously, some of them may now be superseded by whatever the committee decides on government agencies. But we decided there's no need for a bilateral, but we did request them to respond by a particular date, and we haven't received any response. Which I think it's in April to date. So the assumption from our side is that they're satisfied with our responses.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members of the committee. Maybe by way of background again, one should indicate that following the introduction of the bill sometime in last year, we received a request of the department to go and do a presentation on the amendment bill before the provincial executive committee, which we did, I think, late last year. And after that, then that the provincial executive committee sent a submission to the portfolio committee with their concerns regarding the amendment bill. And as NBN already indicated, the minister wrote back through a detailed letter where we tried to address some of the concerns and also reply to some of the questions that they had through their submission. What I'm going to do, and I'm just going to do broadly with the content of the response letter that the PPNC sent to the Premier's office regarding the concerns raised on the amendment bill. And the first issue that they raised in their submission related to government agencies. And as MP indicated, maybe this one has already been superseded by the turn of events in terms of the proposal that was presented before the portfolio committee earlier this morning. But just broadly, one of the issues that they raised in the submission with regard to government agencies was regarding the accountability and the bottom line of government agencies vis-à-vis the head of department, which is one of the questions which was also raised, I think, by one member of the committee in the morning, and the reply that was given. Then the second issue in the submission that was raised by Northwest Province was with regard to the reconsideration by the head of department of sanction imposed by the chair of the disciplinary hearing. And I'm sure, the committee is aware that this one issue we had discussed previously between the committee and the department when the overview of the bill was presented before the portfolio committee. So by way of the question that they had there was, the problem that they have with the amendment bill is that it does not provide for a review of the sanction imposed by the chairperson or pronounced by the chairperson. And what we are proposing again is that once the chairperson pronounces the sanction after the conclusion of the disciplinary hearing, the head of department must implement that sanction, which means we don't give any discretion on the head of department to review that particular sanction. So that was one of the issues that they raised. Why can't we provide for a review process for that particular for the sanction pronounced by the chairperson? And one of the reasons that one can advance is that we should also remember that discipline in the public service now is governed through a collective agreement. And one of the reasons that the department advances in order to enhance or promote the sanctity of our collective agreement, it's very important that we are seen and we always honor our collective agreements. And if the collective agreement says that the chairperson pronounces a sanction, since it is a collective agreement based on negotiations between the department and labor, we have to honor that. And in our response, we did indicate to them that currently in the proposed bill, there is no provision for a review by the head of department. The proposal is that if that sanction is pronounced, the head of department must just implement that sanction by way of giving it administrative effect. Then the next issue that they raised was with regard to employees who resign or leave the public service after having committed misconduct in their previous department, and after that then they join or get reappointed in another department. So in terms of the bill, we are saying that if that situation happens, then the new department must be able to continue with the previous, with the process of dismissing the employee for misconduct allegedly committed in the previous department. So their fear was that maybe this provision only covers areas where the employee transfers from one department to another, not areas where a person resides and gets an appointment in another department. So we try to clarify that as well. Then the next issue related to the submission of grievances to the Public Service Commission by heads of department. The proposal in the bill is that the head of department, if they have a dispute, they should be able to refer the dispute directly to the Public Service Commission. And the issue raised by the Northwest Province was that why can't we allow heads of department to first submit their grievances before their EA or the Premier, or in the case of provinces, or presidents, the president in the case of national departments. And our view is that it actually creates a bit of a precarious situation, in the sense that in some cases, grievances that head of department has actually involve either the Premier or the MEC, him or herself. It becomes a bit of a difficult situation if I have a grievance with you and I must submit it to you for consideration. So the end is suggesting that maybe it's better if heads of department are allowed or granted permission to directly submit their grievances to the Public Service Commission. Then the last issue that, the second last issue that they, I think they were only seeking clarity was simply that whether DKC would give guidelines on the participation of employees in elections. And it is currently the situation that whenever there are elections coming, DPSA sends out a circular to all provincial and national departments detailing issues surrounding what happens if a person gets elected into a position during the election. So that is one issue that we just think that we already have a process in place where we send out circulars to the department, informing or notifying departments on how to handle issues regarding employees who get involved in elections and at the end of the day get elected as either in the municipal council or whatever the case may be. Then the last issue that they raised was the impact of the Single Public Service Initiative on the Public Service Act. I mean, broadly, the response is that obviously the Single Public Service Act or bill would in actual fact repeal the whole of the Public Service Act and all the issues relating to the public service in general, including national, provincial and local government, would now be dealt with under the umbrella of the Single Public Service Act. That is broadly the response that was given to Premier, to the Northwest Province, and that would be a submission to the portfolio committee. Thank you.
I hear the response that you made is to follow up the agreement. But from labor, you have a poor foreman in the middle section. If the employees don't have a right to raise a grievance with the immediate person that is got a dispute, I know the one who's going to be in a very focusing on the problem is the one above that one. But are we not trying to, I'm talking now in general regarding this, as from labor. There's a foreman, then you say you cannot raise, the employee cannot raise this grievance with a foreman, you rather raise it with a supervisor, somebody with it above. Is that a correct way of doing things, in making corrections? Because I don't believe that you should shift the problem to another person for a correction level. I believe strongly in that. No. Okay, I was thinking that maybe let's...
I'm the one who's not
happy with that now. Of course, the problem is my immediate supervisor, which is Kaplan, but I cannot deal with him. I must take it to an upper class. Without putting my position with Kaplan, why I disagree with the way the video is treated me.
It is assumed that when you go ahead, you must have, naturally, you must have had discussions with your immediate. It's an obvious thing. So it's a procedure. but the point that the chair is raising is, of course, it's something that we need. Oh, you wanted to comment on it?
The comment that one can make is the fact that this is just an enabling provision. It doesn't necessarily stop the two parties to first discuss and see if they can iron the issue. I think the problem is that if you don't provide for that, then it means that the HOD cannot directly refer the dispute to the Public Service Commission. He must first bring it to the attention of the MEC or the Premier, whoever the person is. And once he's not satisfied with the outcome of after the consideration by the supervisor, it's only then that by law he would be allowed to refer to the commission. But I think the further thing is that it is just an enabling provision. It still does create and allow room for the two parties to first see if they can't iron their problems before submission. It's submitting it to the commission.
Mama Donnie?
Yes. I just want to question, which is, even if the Public Service Commission is not a sitting, maybe if a person is not, even agreeing with the Public Service Commission, the person can go and consult other institutions, whether the litigation costs and all those things will be included in the funding case, there's this agreement around those issues, because you cannot say the backstop, CBPSC or this thing.
Say something off the record. Yeah, we get right our officials and employees' wages and disciplinary procedures and LCR with members of parliament. We will not hide it, right? About our wages. What's the name? Oh.
Is there any other input? No other input. Before we then maybe it will be necessary for the chairperson of the committee to say some words in closing of our
but we it will also be proper that we close this meeting in stages. Lunch is going to be first in here. The first stage will be where we excuse all of the non-committee members. Then committee members remain for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then we join one another to have lunch. Just to appeal before I hand over to the chairperson, to appeal to the stakeholders. I know it's not all stakeholders represented here, but I know you do communicate. When we appeal to you, who appeal to all. That we must all be seen to be giving space for Parliament to be seen to do its work. And we can't talk of Parliament and to, when we are not talking of portfolio committees of Parliament. We know that there is a time issue that we like to see this bill finalized as soon as possible. We know all of us, in fact, according to this portfolio committee, we would have liked to finalize this bill by around March. Our initial program was like that. But because we said we want to give you as stakeholders an opportunity to do what you thought is right for you to do, we gave you an opportunity to do that. And we can only appeal that you also do that. Give us an opportunity so that we reflect on this thing as a portfolio committee. We have a program which we are saying that we will consider this bill on the 23rd, on the 30th, and finally on the 6th of June. It is there that we are going to adopt if there is any amendment that we are introducing to the bill and adopt a report and table that report to Parliament. That will have given us an opportunity to deal with all the issues that are there, so that we all are happy that we had enough time to deal with this thing. That is our appeal. We are making this appeal strongly because we never knew that if we give an opportunity to stakeholders to do what you thought you wanted to do, that will sometimes even compromise that we don't have time. You'll remember that this bill is with Parliament now. And Parliament referred the bill to the portfolio committee. It's only this portfolio committee that can actually determine that this is the program, let's go for it. We appeal to all of you. Give us support as we have given you support to actually deal with your issues. It's an appeal that we're actually submitting. And we're looking forward to ourselves. If we decide to amend the committee program, it would just be like they say, whereas all animals are equal, but there are some that are more equal than others. I mean, when the bill was in your hand, at whatever stage, you actually dealt with it according to your own program. And it would just be fair to also allow us to deal with this thing in our own program as a portfolio committee. Why not think on top of us if you feel like you were supposed to meet yesterday instead of meeting tomorrow? Do talk to us, but also accept if we say no, that no, it is not possible to do that. Jefferson, I'm handing over to you to.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think I must thank the stakeholders for responding to us the way in which they have done. We are not in a collective bargaining negotiation, whereby, you know, it's a matter of, in a period of 12 months, you have to renegotiate. When you're making law, you're making law for the current time and for the future generation. We should not say to ourselves we've made a mistake by doing things like that, and we're not here for that. That is why we have given you this faith. We wanted you to satisfy yourself, to satisfy also the country, because the laws that we're making are for the society, are not for you that people are concerned. That you must understand. I was listening attentively to the interrogation that was made by Parliament members, even to the agreement that was made between maybe the technical committee of the department and Labour. The more you push, the more you remind the people of something that maybe they have not think of during the time of the negotiating in the technical committee, which is, we are talking to South Africans. That's why at least we're pushing you on these things to be sure of what we're doing is the correct thing that we're doing. Now, I think maybe in terms of the procedure of Parliament, On the other hand, maybe minister can feel that, oh, we should finish this thing in this term. It's good. But for this bill, amendment bill, to go back and to be scrutinized by the president of the country and send it back as a case it was to the intelligence and the Home Affairs, it's an embarrassment to this committee. Therefore, we have to be sure that we're doing the correct thing. If it's gone, it's gone. We know that everybody is happy with it. We don't want to do things on rush. We give everybody a chance. With those few words I say, I thank you very much. I thank you very much also, you Labour, because you were the culprit that I was saying, ooh, Labour is going to take a long time on this thing. And this thing is happening during the negotiation at the same time. Some of the points, no, take this thing to collective bargaining. No, we should not take this thing to the collective bargaining. We're making laws for the future generation of this country. Nobody's guaranteeing us, all of us, that now in the next term we're all going to be here. And the people must not say we've sold them out. I'm happy the way in which you have at least scrutinized and you are making yourself satisfied. But the only thing that I must say to you, your structures on the ground must be properly informed the same way to have the same understanding that you have as leaders of these stakeholders. I thank you very much.